PM, Working Session and Registrar Accreditation Agreement, RAA, Final Report. The presentation will be made by Steve Metalitz. He is the co-chair of the RAA drafting team. So sorry. And the presentation is already uploaded. So, Steve, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Olga. And let me just walk through these slides that Margie has prepared. And I want to start by thanking Margie Milam and the rest of the ICANN staff for all of their help in the activities of the RAA drafting team, because they contributed quite a bit to what I think was a successful effort to carry out the job that this council set for us last year. This gives some of the chronology of the discussions on the Registrar Accreditation Agreement. You'll remember that the last time around, from 2007 through 2009, their various activities were undertaken. There were negotiations between the registrars and the ICANN staff. And ultimately, I'm leaving out some steps, but ultimately in March of 2009, the GNSO approved the new form of the Registrar Accreditation Agreement, but there was a very substantial viewpoint within the council that there needed to be further improvements to the RAA, and that was part of the resolution that approved it and sent it forward to the board, was that there would be some investigation of those improvements and which improvements were needed or what new topics or what additional topics should be addressed. The ICANN board approved the 2009 RAA. The council set up a drafting team to work on two issues, which we'll get to in a minute. And it was also participating in this drafting team were representatives of the ALAC. This council gave us a charter. I think that was also in 2009. And then this drafting team worked until and produced in May of 2010 a report on improvements to the RAA. There was public comment period of, I think, 45 days. Several comments were received. We addressed those, and the final report made some small changes as a result of the public comment, and then the final report is what we'll be discussing today. These were the tasks that this council set for us. One was to draft a charter of the registrant rights and responsibilities under the existing RAA. Second was to identify potential topics for amendments to the RAA. And the third was to develop a process and timeline to move forward on possible amendments. And I will say that we split into sub-teams. Sub-team A was working on the first task there. That was chaired by Bo Brendler. And then the second and third task fell to sub-team B, which I was coordinating. So here's the work product for sub-team A. There is a reference in the 2009 RAA to a web page describing existing rights available to and responsibilities of registrants. That's what this exercise was aimed at, inventorying the current provisions, working with a non-lawyer's guide to the RAA that was developed by the staff. The next steps will be for the staff to consult with registrars and implement a web page for the Rights and Responsibilities Charter. And as part of this process, the at-large community produced an aspirational charter describing rights that it believes should be afforded to registrants. That was not – the first part is kind of descriptive of what's in the existing RAA, and the last part was aspirational. On sub-team B, we considered a great many suggestions for possible amendments to the RAA that came in from a number of sources. The ICANN staff, including the contract compliance staff, but also drawing from lots of other parts of the staff, came up with a very detailed set of proposed amendments, some of which had actual contract language proposed. We received a number of suggestions from a consortium of, I think, seven or eight law enforcement agencies from seven or eight countries that presented on this topic in Seoul at the ICANN meeting a year ago. We received some suggestions from the intellectual property constituency, and we also received others from others within the ICANN community. So we went through a very large matrix of proposed suggestions, proposed topics. Some of them fell out, and I can talk a little bit about why they did. Some because we asked the compliance staff to look at which of these were actually more questions of better enforcement of or better compliance with the existing RAA. They advised us on that, and some topics were taken off the table. Some of the issues in the law enforcement report, law enforcement topics actually dealt more with due diligence in the registrar accreditation process, deciding who is allowed to become a registrar rather than what their obligations are once they become a registrar. So we kind of took those topics out. And we were also we also decided to add really a third element to our sub-team activities, and that was to try to identify any topics that shouldn't be on our list because they really should be addressed by consensus policies. So all of those were taken out that were identified in that fashion. And the result was a very long list, which we honed down to 12 high-priority topics and about the same number of medium priority. I'm not going to go through each one of these, although we could certainly come back to it and do it. But in many cases, they're based on provisions that are already in the RAA, and they would, in effect, build on provisions of the existing RAA. So the first item is to specifically prohibit registrar activities that involve cyber squatting. Second would be to make it clear that registrars do have a duty to investigate reports of malicious conduct that they receive. Third is about having a 24/7 technically competent point of contact on the malicious conduct issues. That would be something registrars would have to do. The next couple deal with privacy and proxy services. There's an existing provision of the RAA that to some extent addresses this. That's 3.7.7.3. But this would build on that. First, to deal with the proxy services that are made available by registrars in conjunction with registration, in other words, proxy and privacy services that the registrars themselves offer, and then first to disclose that and make it clear the registrar is responsible for compliance, and then second on point five there to what those services should do, what standards they should be held to in terms of relaying claims of that a domain name had been used in or that there was actionable activity associated with the domain name, and under what circumstances should they reveal the name of the licensee or the contact points of the licensee, or perhaps you would say the real registrant instead of the proxy registrant. Number six really dealt with other types of privacy proxy services that were made by parties that weren't services that weren't offered in connection with registration by the registrar, but were independent third parties, and what are the circumstances under which those registrations should be canceled. Then the going on in the high priority list, number seven dealt with whether when a registrar should be required to cancel the registration for false whois data. As it stands now, they under a advisory that was issued in, I think, 2002 or 3, it spells out that they have the authority to cancel registrations in these circumstances, but they're not required to do so. The eighth was to, really with regard to, we had a lot of discussion about registrant verification and was there a better way to, or should there be some requirement to verify the identity of registrants, and one suggestion that was made was to require in compliance with the PCI standard, this used by the credit card issuers and others to try to identify who the actual customer is or who it is that's actually making the registration. And since this was a pre-existing standard that many registrars already follow, it was thought this might be a good topic for a requirement in the RAA. Number nine, the 2009 RAA did provide some new obligations on resellers. However, it didn't define what a reseller was, and there was some discussion within our sub-team that maybe we didn't all agree what a reseller was that was was subject to the 2009 RAA. So that's point nine, about clarifying really what's in the 2009 RAA on that subject. Number 10 deals with registrar affiliates and entities that have multiple registrar accreditations, having greater disclosure of that. 11 is greater disclosure of information on the officers in the form of business organization of registrars, which is not very clearly expressed to the public now. And then finally, clarification of registrar responsibilities in connection with the UDRP, both at the beginning of the process and at the end of the process in terms of fulfilling or implementing a decision by a UDRP panel to transfer a domain name. Then there were some additional topics, which I'm not going to take the time to go through, but all of these were felt to be important as well and topics that ought to be considered as part of the new registrar accreditation agreement. Again, most of them building on existing provisions in the RAA. So, for example, there is an obligation now for a registrar to investigate reports of false WHOIS data, and this would spell out what process they should follow in more detail. Again, with resellers, once that was defined, the view was registrars should disclose who their resellers were. There's several related to WHOIS, including a service level agreement on WHOIS availability to be included in the contract. And then there's some procedural questions about the arbitration process, streamlining the process of a registrar being able to add new GTLDs to their accreditation, which apparently is a rather ungainly process now. And then finally, the RAA has always included a requirement that if a registrar code of conduct is adopted, then by the registrars through the ICANN process, then the registrars would have to abide by it. And after now over, I guess, about 10 years of experience under various forms of the RAA, there is no registrar code of conduct, and one proposal to be considered was that if the registrars did not come up with a code of conduct by a date certain, then the staff would draft it, and that would at least get that process going. So those are the topics that we identified in the sub-team B, which included registrars, included ALAC representatives, included representatives from the commercial stakeholders group and others, as possible priority topics for improving the RAA. Our final job was to propose a process for implementing what we had, or moving forward, I guess I should say, because we weren't trying to draft a contract in this group by any means. But what would be the next steps for moving the process forward? And it turned out there was a split within the group on this. I'd say using the criteria for strong support and substantial opposition and those other labels that are used in working groups, although we were not formally a working group, the strong support position was that I guess I should say first that everyone agreed on certain aspects of this, including that the next step would be for the council and the staff to review these recommendations, determine if they thought there were some issues that should be taken off the table because they could only be dealt with in the consensus process. As I said, we looked at that, and the group that was participating in the drafting team thought all these issues fit inside the what should be done in the RAA revision, but obviously that's not the drafting team's decision. So that was the first step in every case. And then the last step was almost the same in every case. The last two steps were the same in all the processes. But if you go back, there were as I said, there was a strong support position, there was a substantial opposition provision, and then as we started discussing it more and trying to reach a decision, there were actually quite a few sub-team members who I think wanted a position that was even, if you will, stronger than the strong support position, if you want to put it that way. And basically, the differences dealt with who was going to be involved in the negotiations. The strong support position was that there should be ICANN, there should be the registrars, and there should also be observers that represented the interests of affected non-parties to the agreement. The substantial opposition group, which consisted of registrars on the drafting team, said that they should not have observers in the negotiations, but that there should be regular reports out of the negotiations. And then the viewpoint that came out toward the end from several sub-team members was this, that the third parties, the affected non-parties, should be full participants in the negotiations. So if you want to go to the next one, this is just the whole process. This is in the strong support version, but as I said, number one is the same. Two differs with the other options about who is involved with negotiating. And I think all of them also have in common the idea that the negotiating group would report periodically. It would ask for comments, either from the GNSO or the ALAC, about particular issues. And then the question is, point six, who decides when the full draft of the new RAA is ready to be posted for public comment? And the strong support position was that that decision should be made by the staff and the registrars, but that they should be required to consult with the observers who had been participating in these negotiations in order to come to an agreement that it was ready to go out for public comment. And then, as I said, 7 and 8, I think, are basically the same in all the in the different versions. So finally, this is the motion that has been presented to the council, and that I understand is on the agenda for this meeting. It basically goes through what the history as I've described it, and that there was a final report, and that it endorses the final report. It approves of the form of the registrant rights and responsibilities charter, so that would get done, and the link, you know, the registrars would be required to link to that. It recommends that the staff begin consulting with registrars. That's the third point, is about getting it on the websites. And then the recommendation is to adopt the process A, the process that had strong support in the final report, for developing a new form of the RAA, focusing on the high and medium priority topics. So that means the first step would be review this and see if what has to be taken out because of if there are any that have to be done through the consensus policy process, and then move on from there and the other steps in the strong support version. So I think that, let's see. Yeah, that's the process.
Yes,
okay.
It's time to the process.
Okay, so I will stop there and turn it back to the chair for questions.
Thank you very much, Steve. I will open a queue for questions. I have the hand of Jeff by my side. Who else? Avery? Wendy? Mary?
Mason?
Adrian, you were waving? No. Oh, sorry. I was confused. Jeff, go ahead, please.
Thanks. I just have a quick one, and then I'm sure I'll follow up after everyone else. You said that there was agreement on the drafting team as to which of those issues fell within the consensus policy process. And was that a full agreement, like everyone on the drafting team agreed at those, or was there some sort of disagreement as to which topics were in the picket fence and which ones weren't?
My recollection is that any time people brought up that it shouldn't be included because it was a consensus policy issue, we took it off the list.
Tim, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I believe the registrars, you know, reserved comment one way or the other on that. So, I just want to make sure that that's clear.
Margie.
My recollection was that it was a really cursory, but that's why one of the steps in the process, in both processes, is to go back and look through it to see whether it's consensus policy or not. So we didn't take a poll on whether those were consensus or not consensus that I recall, Steve, if that's correct.
Thank you. Avery?
Thank you. I just wanted to sort of point out one thing on the slides there. I was certainly one of those participants who felt that all of the participants in GNSO needed to be represented in those discussions. And I did not feel, though, that we needed to be represented as third parties in those discussions, but rather that the GNSO is an integral part of ICANN. It is the one that makes policy recommendations to the board on issues related to registrars, registries, etc., and that therefore, and the board is the one that has to sign any of these agreements, so that to take ICANN and say there is staff, and yes, they are parties, there is ICANN and there is GNSO, and no, they are not parties, they are third party, is an invalid way to look at it, and that the GNSO really did need to be participants in the discussions. Thank you.
Thank you, Avery. Wendy?
Thanks. I have a question about these proposed next steps, some of which goes to the point that Avery was raising. The next slide, I think. So if this motion were approved, is the idea that we would then be in stage one, where we would have this list and we as council would be responsible for filtering out, along with the assistance of staff, many issues, to my mind, in here that involve policy decisions rather than mere negotiation and implementation points?
Yeah, I think both of the processes started with this one. And so the idea was that it was while our task force took on the task of trying to identify any that definitely should not be included, Tim is correct, we didn't ever vote on anything or make a final conclusion that anything should be included or on the question of whether it fell within consensus policy. So it would obviously be up to the staff and council, or the council, to figure out the best way to utilize the staff to help it decide whether any of these topics should be knocked off the list for that reason.
Thanks. So that diminishes but doesn't eliminate my concern with the negotiation being only between registrars and staff, with perhaps observation but not full participation. I would tend to agree that as this is a contract that will affect all of us and give even less opportunity for pushback for those who aren't parties to the contract, because we've all been interpreted out of any third-party participation in the contract, it's really critical that we get things right at step one and make sure that we express all of our policy concerns now, either prior to adoption of this motion as the process goes forward.
Thank you, Wendy. Mary?
Thanks, Olga. And my question is a follow-up and quite similar to Wendy's, and it's with respect specifically to, I guess, point two in process A. I would think that this probably may not have been a question that was considered by the drafting team, so it may be a question both for the drafting team and my fellow counselors, as in terms of timing and process and decision, the certain observers, how would that be decided and by whom?
Mary, you're correct. That was not really discussed by the drafting team.
Thank you, Steve. Mason?
Steve, if I could, if we go back to the slide that dealt with the high priority amendment items, I just wanted to get clarification. So what was or wasn't taken off and according to what criteria off that list as it relates to the picket fence? To whether it's a policy matter or a contract matter?
I can't, nothing on that list was taken off because this list omits everything that was taken off for that reason. I can't recall exactly which ones that had been, Margie may remember some, but we looked at a huge matrix.
Yep.
Literally, it's about 100 suggestions, and some of them were taken off for different reasons. As I said, the compliance issue, it's really a due diligence issue, how do you get to be accredited, and then some were taken off because some people said that looks more like a consensus policy issue.
Right. So is this list, is everything on this list then outside the fence?
Everything, it's probably fair to say nothing on this list was raised by a team member as being something that should be dealt with under consensus policy.
Okay.
And I remember one example. For example, there was a request to prohibit domain warehousing, and that was one of those that seemed like it was clear. So there was a tremendous list. Things were filtered. I don't have a list of exactly what was excluded.
Okay. Thank you.
Jeff.
Yeah, to follow up on that, I guess I'm a little confused because it seems like, aren't we doing studies on 4, 5, and 6? Don't those kind of fit into some of the studies that are being done? And didn't we just ask for a bunch of funds to be allocated for it? It seems to me that, it seems to me that we're just kind of trying to circumvent the process. I mean, why would we do this at the same time that we're doing studies on the same issues? I mean, it seems to me that we're just trying to circumvent everything we've done before. But I guess, and then the other thing I'm a little confused about, and forgive me because I'm new to the council, so I just may be confused. But why are we talking about, it keeps saying that we're going to, if we pass this, we go directly into negotiations as opposed to going through, even if we don't do a full PDP, don't we still need to look at a policy process of studying the impact and how we need to understand these issues rather than just going straight into negotiations? But everything I hear is once we pass this resolution, we're going to go straight into negotiations. I think we're missing something. Yeah, please.
On the last point, I think it's clear from the process slide, and I tried to emphasize this, that we don't go straight into negotiations. We first decide which issues, if there are any issues that shouldn't be part of that. And then Mary has raised the point that if we go with the process that was substantially supported by the drafting team, then some method has to be decided upon, whether it's, it could be a lot of different methods, but for figuring out who are these observers. So it's not straight into negotiation as far as that goes. On 4, 5, and 6, well, the fact that they're about privacy proxy services, you're right, those are topics that have been the subject of studies that ICANN has undertaken and are the topic in some cases of studies that ICANN is planning to undertake. But this is not a study process. And the study told us, for example, that approximately 20 million GTLD domain names are registered without the name of the actual registrant, the actual party in interest appearing in who is. About 20% of all GTLD names. That's an important fact, but it's not the same thing as saying there should be some change or some greater specificity about how such services are supposed to operate. So I don't see any great contradiction between these, between the fact that there are some studies that have taken place, some other studies that are ongoing, and the idea of moving forward with more detailed provisions on this topic. That's just my view.
Thank you, Steve. Tim.
Thanks. I just wanted to respond to some concerns that it sounds like Wendy has and probably to some extent Avery, I guess, too. And that is that, when the original 2001 RAA as well as the existing one, actually, it was designed, at least from our perspective, it was designed to give the community exactly what Wendy just said that she felt was needed, or Avery, the opportunity to fully participate and to have full, say in what many of these different aspects of registrar operations become or whatever. Those are the consensus policies, and there's a huge number of different issues that fall under what is considered consensus policy within the RAA. It was limited to that. If that was not the purpose, to have some limit to those topics that would be a part of community discussion, then why is it there? So clearly, that was the intent. That was the impression we were given as registrars when we signed the RAA, and that's all we're asking about for going forward. So, yes, we fully agree. There are issues, there are many topics the community should be fully involved in, but there are others that are negotiations between ICANN and the registrars. Thanks.
Thank you, Tim. Avery and some... Christina, you want it? No. Avery, go ahead, please.
Thank you. Yeah, in trying to differentiate, though, the differences between the things that are consensus policies within picket fences that allow existing contracts to be changed versus things that get negotiated as being components of the next contract signed, I don't see why the one of, yes, there are certain issues that are picket fence issues, and those are consensus policy issues, and those don't affect next contract signings, but those affect current contract, versus things that affect future contract. Why the fact that there is a consensus policy would exclude the future discussed items? I don't understand the logic of that. There are certain things that have an immediate effect, and there are certain things that are part of something that has a future effect. And the fact that you have one should not preclude the other. And as I say...
Just to be clear, though, consensus policy has immediate and future effects. So once the consensus policy is passed, it's effective immediately on all registrars and all new registrars that come along, right? So
right, yeah. Okay. But and things that aren't within those consensus policies just affect the next signing of the contract, correct? It affects the next time you sign the RAA. So what we're saying is just because there is a role for the whole GNSO community to participate in the consensus policies does not preclude that they should have a role in discussing the future policies. And I don't see a logical connection between those.
Yeah, and I would agree as long as those future policies fall within the picket fence. But we don't. But you know, if they do, then they take immediate effect. Correct. The point is, what you're just you want to undo exactly what we did when we signed that agreement, and that was said. These are the things that we're opening up for community discussion. Everything else is not. I mean, that was the arrangement. That was what we agreed to when we signed those agreements. Part of that reason is to provide some amount of predictability for registrars and their business operations, et cetera. The same is true with the registry agreements.
Sorry, Tim. Jeff has a comment, and Avery, you want to follow up?
After Jeff.
Thank you.
So can I ask, I think I've heard how Avery feels, but I'd like to actually know from everyone else on this council, including some of the ones that are big supporters of some of these amendments, is it everybody's understanding that if we went forward with this, that anything that comes out of this process would not be something that could be imposed on a current agreement, but would only be for future agreements? In other words, if it's outside, if you don't go through a PDP, you don't go through the consensus process, because I'm not sure I've heard that yet from others, because my fear is that even if we are allowed to negotiate things for future agreements, which I'm still listening to both sides, even if we're allowed to do that, it's my impression that a lot of people in this community will want these changes immediately in agreements, and it would be great if people could at this point state, no, we understand that none of these would apply until the people sign the agreement the next time, which could be 5 years. And also one of the things that should be on the table then is, you know, I hear Tim's concern, obviously, as a registry and another contracted party, that maybe terms of agreement should be longer because, you know, if things could be completely changed, anything's open, then terms of agreement should be much longer to give more certainty and predictability. But I just want to hear on my first question of everybody else, if we went forward with this, it's the understanding of everyone that it would not apply to current contracts, but anything in the future as things come up for renewal.
Sorry, Avery, you want to comment? Or?
Yeah, and I think it's great that you've asked the question of others, and I hope others understand. Just from our previous encounter with the RAA, it was indeed that things didn't happen until the next signing of the contract, but there was also an incentive placed on re-signing sooner. So that has been the practice, and I certainly wasn't suggesting that we would change that practice at all, that those things that were not within the picket fence consensus policy, indeed, that is the... I would hope that at the end of it... The other thing that I would point out, and then I'll shut up for a bit, I hope...
Thank you, Avery. Steve, you want to comment something?
Yes, I just want to give my personal response to what Jeff said. I agree. If a new RAA is negotiated, then it doesn't become binding on anybody until they sign it. And I also agree with Avery that if we're able to negotiate a better RAA that, doesn't... in other words, if we're able to grasp the huge opportunities, in my view, that were missed in the 2009 process because it was a more closed process, if we're able to get a better RAA that better protects registrants and that deals more fairly with the interests of third parties, I think that ICANN should... do what it can to try to get registrars to sign it as soon as possible. But that doesn't, the contracts they are under now are what they are, and they have a term, and that's this wouldn't change that.
Tim.
Yeah, and I think just speaking for myself, for GoDaddy, that, many of the things that I think we've seen there, they look like some good improvements to us as well. So I think it wouldn't be hard to incent us to want to sign on early as well, just as we did in the last RAA. But we need, we're concerned about is having a process that we can get registrars to participate in that will work and we can have a good result so that we can move forward with something that's going to improve, the landscape for everybody. That's all we're looking for.
Thank you, Tim. Other comments? You want to say a conclusion, Steve? No? Christina?
Just to answer specifically Jeff's question, I mean, that the understanding that Avery and Steve have stated is also mine. Having said that, I don't know that it's necessarily my understanding or the understanding of counselors that controls. I mean, I would suggest that, frankly, this is something that we'd have to get the view of the general counsel or the legal department on.
March and Jeff.
And we did provide information in the report. If you take a look, there's a memo that was submitted by staff outlining the different options for amending the RAA. So I encourage you guys to take a look at that. And I just want to point out a couple things. Certainly voluntary adoption is always a possibility. We would explore things like incentives if that's what the community wants. I mean, these are all things that are open and available for discussion. And I just want to remind you that when we did the 2009 version of the RAA, that included topics, the amendments included topics that were in the picket fence and were also not in the picket fence. And so as long as this becomes a collaborative process that everyone buys into, there may be flexibility with respect to what goes into the RAA.
Jeff.
Yeah, can you pull up the resolution again? Yeah. So I'm going to probably ask, and I think this is something we should probably do a little bit better job. We put a lot into one resolution, and if we vote up or down, it's either we vote to approve every single thing in that resolution or we vote to reject everything in that resolution. I'd like to make a request at some point that to divide this resolution up into a bunch of separate motions, as I've done on others, because I think if you look at each resolution, there are some that are obviously much more controversial than others. And I think, obviously accepting the report and, appreciating it is something we could, it's fine, it's great. But I think we have so much in this resolution when you look through this And then you look at the next page, doesn't it continue? Because it specifically spells out. So if one of us disagrees with any one of those steps, the entire resolution has to be voted down. I mean, we have no choice. So I guess, you know, this is something we're going to discuss with the registries. And I have a feeling the registries are going to have some issues with some parts of this, but maybe not with other parts. And so I wouldn't be surprised if we came back and asked for this motion to be split into a few.
We have a question in the open mic. Rob?
Hi, just more of a comment, actually. A lot of this focus has been on what the community wants. And now you're about to vote to enter into a negotiation with the registrars. And I would caution you, as a registrar, it may not be in my best interest to say this, but you should be thinking about what will we want. So negotiations give and take. And the more you put on the what you want on the give side, if you will, the more the registrars are going to want in return. And so you've got a pretty balanced contract right now that gives you a picket fence and things you can affect. I would caution you about how much you ask for and how many of that list, Steve, that you really want, and to prioritize the ones you really want. Because I suspect when you ask a party like the registrars to go away and say, hey, what do you want? We'll all get in a room and figure out what we want. And I saw this same process go through with the, you know, what came out of basically the .com contract, which when you ask a company such as VeriSign or such as registrars, what do you want? It's often not what you expect or what the community wants. So I would just caution you to prioritize perhaps what's really important versus we want these 30 things. Because what if the registrars came back, and I use a draconian example, and said, great, we want to know who is. You know, it could be something, or we want a 20-year contract. And I'm guessing at what may be some of these things. But don't assume that you'll just get all your laundry list without any give on the other side.
Steve, and then Tim.
Rob, I think that's a good point. One thing I don't think our team did as well as we might was honing down priorities. And I think it's understandable in a sense, because when you're actually in a negotiation, that's when you really have to focus on what are the most important ones in there. So I think we did our best to try to – we did throw a lot of other things overboard, believe me, or at least put them in a lower priority. But I agree that the other thing I just wanted to say is that, you know, registrars participated in this team, participated quite actively and constructively, and so that was one opportunity for some registrars. Obviously, they weren't speaking necessarily for all registrars to say, this is what we want in the new contract. So it was very much open to them to do that, and I think some of the actual if you look in the report, I think the wording of some of these topics definitely reflects input from the registrar.
Just a point of clarification on that. So there's some things in this report that you think, you examined the RAA and said, look, we don't need some of these things in it? Like, are there both sides of it, or these are all new things you want added or changed?
These are the new things that were proposed either by law enforcement, by the staff,
right. So
or
so did the committee look at, here's stuff in it that we don't need anymore? Or maybe this is stuff that is old or outdated than Bulk Who Is, for example.
Well,
you know, I'm throwing out other things.
Yeah, there certainly was some discussion about that, but no, it basically was looking at the topics that were proposed by the
wish
public.
List.
Yeah,
okay.
and trying to set priorities among those.
I have Tim and Michele. Tim. Michele, go ahead.
I was actually on both of the sub-teams, as you know. I'd actually have to disagree with you. Quite strongly. While you definitely did get registrar input into rewording, rephrasing, toning down in some cases, or making practical the list of items that have been put forward, at no time did we ever really get into looking at bulk who is access provisions or anything that the registrars may have wanted to do, and nor did we really even have a chance to do so, because to be perfectly frank, from my perspective and just speaking as me, not for any other registrar, we were put in quite a defensive position, because some of the things that people were asking for us to do within this entire RAA thing, and I'm not talking about the rights as laid out and consensus policy, yada yada yada, I'm talking about very, very big, significant changes. We had to go on the defensive there because some of the changes were that people were putting on those lists originally were very, very broad sweeping. Now, as Rob points out, you know, there may be things that we would like to see removed, and maybe some of those things are things that you won't like. So, you know, be careful what you wish for.
Thank you, Michele. Tim, you want to say something? No? Margie?
I wanted to address the point that Jeff made about splitting up the resolution. And one area where I would suggest you may want to split the resolution relates to the approval of the Registrant Rights and Responsibilities Charter, because that seems like there's no controversy or, you know, it seems to be generally accepted what it should say, and it would be it would hold up the consultation process and then, you know, the next steps from the registrar team to be able to get that implemented. I don't know, Tim Cole, if you want to address that from your perspective, or Mason.
No, I agree. We're prepared to start the consultation process with the registrars, but we're just waiting for this process to be finished. So I would certainly say that separating them out would be a reasonable thing to do.
Just a point of clarification. I mean, the motion is to approve a process going forward. It's not approving the rights and responsibilities document itself, right? Okay.
More comments, more questions? Steve, you want to say conclusion?
No, just thank you, everybody, for your participation. And if there are further questions, I'd be glad to talk with you offline.
Thank you very much, everyone. And we have finished this presentation and meeting. And the next meeting is the joint meeting with the GAC. I think we have to move there, Stefan. Am I right? We have to go to the room, which is nearby. And it's from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Thank you very much.